Welcome to episode number 96 of the LSR Podcast. My name is Matt Brown, joined each and every week by the brightest minds in all of the gaming industry. With me, I have Matt Waters making another special appearance with us. I also have Adam Candy of the 2E variety. No Y on the end there, 2Es. And you should follow him on Twitter at Adam Candy, 2Es, no Y. Matt, where people find you on the old Twitter machine?
I am at by Matthew Waters.
You know that you are a writer when you have the by in front of your of your name. Adam, maybe I should have gone with by Matt Brown instead of this whole M2 on the end thing.
Oh, sir, you are a multimedia content producer. You need to just keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the M2 at the end is I don't know. A lot of people are like, why is it there? And I'm like, listen, when you have a name like Matt Brown, you kind of have to go with stuff like that. I mean, it just is what it is.
I can't tell you how often I am looking on Twitter and I see it pop up with Matt Brown and I see it's a different Matt Brown.
There's like five of them. I know. There's like five of them out there. There's like a college football writer. There's like a basketball guy. There's all kinds of stuff. But neither here nor there. We're going to talk Bally's continuing to spend a ton of cash. Is the NFL really wanting this much money? That seems crazy. We're going to get a new sponsorship / naming rights thing down there in the Big Easy. Of course, we'll get our state updates as well. But Matt, we have you on here because you have been following closer than anybody everything that has been going on over in Tennessee. And man, this has been absolutely wacky. We have talked about it the last couple of weeks here on the pod, but in case somebody finding us for the first time in a bit, why don't you give the background here of what all went down and then go ahead with all the things that followed that you were able to follow over the last couple of weeks.
Oh my gosh. It has been a crazy couple of weeks in Tennessee. So Action 24/7 had its license suspended last week. It happened right before March Madness. It happened right after the tip-off of the first four games. We didn't know that the license was suspended at the time. The website just went down, and it said it was for maintenance, which obviously that's a little bit of a weird time for maintenance. So we started poking around, and eventually the lottery held a special meeting the next day, and it turns out that there were multiple instances of suspected credit card fraud on Action 24/7's platform. And for whatever reason, Action 24/7 didn't think that they had to turn that into the Tennessee Lottery right away. So the actual credit card fraud started on March 8th, according to their counsel, but it wasn't turned in until March 17th. So their license was immediately suspended. Of course, they took some exception to that. They didn't, Action 24/7 didn't believe that the lottery really followed the process correctly. The lottery disagreed, saying that it was an emergent situation, and so they could do what they did. And so it was heard in Chancery Court on Wednesday, and there's been no ruling yet. It's clear that neither side, it's not exactly clear, but it doesn't seem like either side really did everything they were supposed to. The judge was, or chancellor, whatever her title is, wasn't thrilled that the lottery didn't have a written summary of a final statement. And so basically we have three options that can come down. The judge can either grant the temporary injunction. She could not grant the temporary injunction, or it could be remanded back to the board to kind of follow the procedures that are outlined in the rules and regulations. If that happens, don't expect much to change. That's from the lottery itself, from the representative from the attorney general's office that was speaking at the hearing. Basically, if it was going to change, if their license could be reinstated, the lottery would have to see a lot of changes from Action 24/7, and they just haven't been done yet.
So, Adam, let's kind of go back just a tad here, and let's look at this whole deal in Tennessee. And people were wondering, you know, might be wondering what's actually, you know, why has this been such a cluster? And, you know, basically at the end of the day, Tennessee is one of those states that when they adopted sports betting, they were kind of going from the ground up here. They had no sort of casino gambling within the state whatsoever. And so with that, the purview fell under the lottery here. And so it seems as if and I'm just, you know, outside looking in here, and you can probably give some better perspective here, but it looks as if the lottery is it fair for me to say has been struggling through this process?
So I think you have to go way back to the beginning to understand what's going on at the lottery, because keep in mind, we were sitting here dragging Tennessee for the better part of a year for doing nothing, for getting, you know, no progress made on bringing up its program. They had hired Jennifer Roberts away from UNLV to come down and get that program started. Really, there was not a lot of progress made for about a year. Jennifer Roberts left. They brought in Daniel Boyd from William Hill to help get it off the ground. And actually, she only needed a couple of months to get things going. But, you know, you are dealing with a lottery overall that has no experience in regulating sports betting. And, you know, when you talk to lottery folks who are dedicated lottery folks, who've been lifetime lottery folks, there is a lack of general understanding of how the game is different than sports betting as an operation. And I think that's why you saw the minimum hold requirement go in Tennessee. That is a much more lottery based idea than what we've seen when it comes to sports betting, the idea that, you know, that operators have to hold a certain amount every month. So you come back to this particular situation, and right from the beginning, it sort of put up red flags for everyone that a payday loan company with no experience in sports betting wanted to get into sports betting. They went through the regulatory process. They were approved, and it looks from what we're seeing that it has been struggles of various forms from day one in terms of Action 24/7 being able to monitor its own house. Because as Matt mentioned, you've got the instances of credit card fraud and money laundering. And when we talk about this, to get really specific about it, guys, you would not need to be an investigator on the level of Danny Dorenzio, who's been doing it down in Tennessee, to understand what the problem is here. As he explained it on the regulatory meeting on Friday afternoon, if someone is going in with multiple credit cards, depositing large amounts of money, and then immediately withdrawing that money out of the account, chances are they're not there to bet on sports. So if that's what's going on, that is something that is a serious, serious problem that any online gaming operation with any sort of serious self-regulatory operation would have caught immediately and would have stopped immediately. And instead, according to the Tennessee Lottery, this happened multiple times over the course of multiple hours to the tune of potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars of damages to people with stolen credit cards. This is an enormously, enormously dangerous situation, not just for Tennessee, but for the entire legal sports betting industry in the U.S. This is the first time that we have seen a sports betting license for an operator be suspended. And it was suspended indefinitely by the regulators in Tennessee, who have said, look, we already had a situation back near the Super Bowl where we suspected that Action 24/7 was involved in proxy betting, essentially where someone in Tennessee was betting for multiple other people out of state who were not eligible to be betting, and were told to get their house in order, assured the regulators they did have their house in order. And then all of this that we just mentioned happened after that time. So the regulators want to suspend the license indefinitely, until Action can prove to an independent third party that they have their house in order. On the other side of this, Action has now gone to court, as Matt described, to try to get that suspension overturned, claiming irreparable harm. Well, I think the regulators have a case on the other side to say, you know what could cause irreparable harm? Hundreds of thousands of dollars of credit card fraud on stolen cards that is not only dangerous to individual people, that is dangerous to the credibility of the entire legal sports betting industry in Tennessee. And
so, Matt, you've listened to a ton of these hearings. You've listened to a ton of different, whether it be lawmakers talking about things, whether it be, you know, attorneys talking about things for various states as we've gone through the legalization process, as we've gone through follow-ups, as we've gone through bills getting introduced, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as you were listening to this Tennessee stuff kind of unfold here, did it sound a lot different than these other states that you listen to? Did it sound as if there were people that were kind of naive on the subject, or at least not as well versed as a lot of the things that you have listened to over the last year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is kind of unprecedented what we're seeing. First of all, you know, we've called it credit card fraud so far, but Tennessee doesn't allow betting with credit cards. So these are all debit cards. So the funds that were actually taken, it was about 22,000. I think it was 37,000, but action stopped 14,000 of it, but still 22,000 is gone from consumers' accounts. I mean, it was a debit card. That money was gone. The other thing that is really astonishing is, you know, action couldn't stop when this was happening immediately because they didn't have around the clock monitoring for a company that's named Action 24/7. It's amazingly ironic that they didn't have monitoring 24/7. Basically, these fraud instances were happening overnight when nobody was monitoring what was going on Action's platform. They weren't discovered until staff came in at 10 a.m. the next morning. And so, yes, while, you know, another company probably would have been able to stop it immediately because signals would have gone up, you know, what have you, Action didn't have that built into their platform. So they just simply didn't know it was happening. And the other amazing thing is that while most of these cases occurred from the 9th to the 12th, there was another fraud case that they suspect that occurred on the 16th. And it was only after that, it was only after the 23rd instance that counsel said CEO Tina Hodges decided Action 24/7 needed 24/7 monitoring. So I mean, there's been a lot of surprising things that have come out of this whole process, but that was truly astonishing because that, clearly that's part of minimum internal controls that are needed that Action 24/7 said that they had when they launched, and it just wasn't true.
So another question here for people that might be wondering, like, you know, we sit here and talk about on this podcast, you know, a ton, DraftKings, FanDuel, PointsBet, BetMGM, et cetera, et cetera. And then here we are talking about, you know, Action 24/7. And so what kind of piece of the pie do they have anyway? Why is this so important to them, do you think, to keep going? I mean, with obviously they don't have the infrastructure in place to properly run this thing. They've already been caught, you know, doing what, you know, nefarious different things here. Like, what is going on with this company? Why is this such a thing? Because they can't have that much market share. They can't be making that much money. And then, of course, now with all these, you know, getting their license suspended, attorneys, fees, who knows what's going to happen moving forward. What's the impression you get from these guys?
Yeah, you know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. Eilers and Krejcik, a gaming consultancy, estimated that they had a 3% market share in the market, which is not much, especially when there were only, I believe, four operators at the time. Look, Action 24/7 is proud that they are from Tennessee. They want to be the local Tennessee bettors sportsbook. That's how they've been angling it. And they also have the unique position that they can take cash deposits at their payday loan shops. Now, that's come into a bit of controversy as well. There are there's a proposal in Tennessee's both House and Senate to end that. They basically want to make sure that you are either a Action 24, the company is Advanced Financial 24/7. So you either have to be an Advanced Financial 24/7 customer with a loan, or you can be an Action 24/7 customer that's betting. That's what this legislation would do. You could hypothesize many things about why Action 24/7 wants to keep this going, but it's not because they found that they're thriving in this market and they really have something going for them. They're really only taking the scraps at this point.
And before we let you go, I saw your tweet come through a couple of days ago where it seems that despite the fact that they were in fact suspended, that they were still putting out promos and different things like that. Did we ever find out, you know, if you're suspended, can you still try to acquire customers? Which one seems odd to me if that's the case, or did they respond as to what was going on with all that? It just seems crazy to me.
Yeah. So right before 7 o'clock, One night I received the email. You know, I create a lot of sports betting accounts just to see how these apps work and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm on the customer database email list for a lot of these. And they were offering a free pick'em game where you had a chance to win a $50 free bet. And it actually did let me make some selections for the pick'em game. But then when it went, it would not allow the selections to go through. It said there was an error message. Neither Action 24/7 nor the Tennessee Education Lottery has gotten back to me on any of these requests. I emailed everyone very quickly, and we're going on days now with no answer from the lottery of whether this company is allowed to be marketing while they're suspended. It seems like the obvious answer is no, like you said, but it just kind of ties into the whole bigger story here of you know, how can that not be answered quickly? There's just a lot of confusion on a lot of moving pieces here.
Well, I know there will be a ton more information that will come out on all of this, and we will certainly get you back on here to update us on everything that's going on with this craziness over in Tennessee. Of course, there'll be we also have an entire site dedicated to Tennessee as well at Play 10. So I'm sure they will be all over this as well. Just craziness with everything. So, Matt, thanks for stopping by. And guys, everybody, check out everything that he's doing over at Legal Sports Report. Really, really great work, man. Keep it up.
Thanks, guys.
Adam, just a ton of craziness there going on in Tennessee. And this is kind of one of the reasons why we've been, you know, multiple different times here on the pod, especially you and Dustin have been kind of screaming from a mountaintop that typically these gaming things need to be in the hands of gaming professionals, get people that have, you know, been around this stuff and have done this stuff for a long time. And when you just kind of like throw it on something like the lottery, and everyone just thinks like, oh, well, lottery's gambling too. So it's just, you know, they certainly understand what's going on. Well, it is certainly not apples to apples. It's not really even apples to oranges. It's definitely fruits and vegetables at this point, as opposed to stuff like that. And so, I mean, you know, we see Tennessee kind of the wheels, not necessarily falling off, but, you know, we are not very deep into this, and we're already seeing that, man, it's pretty tough to monitor and handle all this stuff if you don't really have a background in doing so.
No, there are some serious questions for Rebecca Hargrave, the president of the Lottery Corporation, to answer, because it's been under her purview here for the last year and a half. And, you know, the questions have to extend all the way back to why did it take so long for this to get up and running in the first place? But they have to go immediately to why was Action 24/7 licensed in the first place if it was not demonstrating the minimum controls that it has proven not to be able to keep up with? Because I don't think we can apply a broad brush stroke to the lottery for DraftKings and FanDuel and other companies that are in the state, right? These companies have operated in the state without any problems since launch. It's Action that's been the stepchild of this entire thing, but maybe it is symptomatic of a much larger question, which is how are you going to be able to regulate sports betting via a lottery without the expertise in sports betting? I mean, it's not just Tennessee either. We can look at Virginia and say that their rollout has just been strange. And, you know, they have someone running their lottery who is basically his background is in press. So, you know, there are lots of questions but if I know that expertise in the U.S. in sports betting is in short supply, right, Matt? We've talked about that bunch of times, that there aren't that many people with serious experience on this side of the pond. That's why you see so many, you know, UK and Euro folks getting involved in the industry. And it's important to understand that there is expertise out there, right? There is expertise in sports betting. And if you're yelling at your phone right now, listening to the podcast, saying, well, of course there are people who know how sports betting runs, they've been doing it for the last 20 years. You're not getting licensed in most jurisdictions if you have been in Costa Rica or Curacao or somewhere else working on sports betting over the last couple of decades before PASPA fell in 2018.
Yeah, it's, you know, look, I think there were some decent intentions and stuff along the way there, but you know, bringing in some people that certainly knew their way around, but eventually, you know, if they can't call all the shots themselves, it's pretty tough to move things along like you want to, you know. And that's like, I think that's kind of where we are with a couple of different people that we know that have gone over there to try to straighten things out.
there's just not much more to say than, unless you are dedicated to the idea that sports betting is a unique animal, that it requires a very specific expertise, then you're going to probably lead yourself into folly thinking that you can deal with it the same way you deal with lottery, the same way you deal with online casino even. I mean, online casino is obviously a closer corollary, but it's certainly a different ball game than all the nuance in sports betting.
Real good insight from Matt Waters as well. He's following that as close as anybody out there. And so be sure and follow his work over on LegalSportsReport.com, doing really, really good stuff there. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review for us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google. So listen, help us climb those charts. More people can find this podcast, and we can preach the good word here. And let's go ahead, Adam, and move on with, you know, some of the big stories of the week. And we hit on this briefly last week about the spending spree that Bally's has really put on yet. Now, they have not made a big splash in the U.S. quite yet, but I think there's an argument to be made that maybe they're going about it a little bit differently, and maybe it could end up paying off, right? Like, they're not really piecemealing it together. They're going to go ahead and try to come in one big fell swoop here with, you know, not only a media arm in acquiring the rights to the Fox Sports regionals, which of course now are owned by Sinclair, but they will all be rebranded actually here in about a week. So March the 31st, that you will be watching your regional sports teams on Bally Sports as opposed to Fox Sports out there. We know that they acquired Monkey Knife Fight. We know they acquired a social gaming company as well. And it looks like they are really ponying up the big bucks now.
Matt, the one reason I look at this and say maybe it's not repeatable for everyone is that they appear to be printing money at a secret location somewhere and just doling it out to everyone in the industry. The latest deal that has brought it to our attention this week is a $2.8 billion bid for Gamesys out of the UK. Yes, billion with a B. It is a 13% premium on the Gamesys share price as of Wednesday. It is a 39% premium on the Gamesys share price as of the beginning of talks on January 25th. $1 billion of revenue last year with $300 million EBITDA for Gamesys. And I think what's most interesting here is that as you look at the way Bally's is doing it, they are pretty much trying to get the whole ecosystem under their umbrella and figure it out before they seriously launch, because what they don't have anywhere is an actual platform. There is no Bally Sportsbook right now. Bally Bets is, you know, more in theory than in practice. So, Matt, the line in this story that caught my attention from Brad Allen, and I think we could take this line, we could take the name Bally's out and just apply it across the U.S. sports betting industry. Bally's will fund the deal through debt and an equity capital raise. Bally stock was up 4% following the announcement. Yeah. Spending money like crazy and your stock goes up. I mean, the multiples on revenue that are being traded out there right now are just unbelievable. You mentioned what they've done. Bet.works, Monkey Knife Fight, Sport Caller. They really are trying to build an empire prior to launch.
And Adam, I think, you know, whenever we kind of look at this, maybe what we're seeing, and it didn't take long for DraftKings to make a move. It did not take long for Paddy Power to make a move, you know, in with the FanDuel stuff and things like that. And Bally seems to be kind of going along this same route as well. It seemed we were on a bunch of partnerships from the onset of legalized sports betting, and it seems it did not take a lot of these people very long to realize, like, you know what? We're not going to do partnerships and chop up this stuff. Like, I'd rather just put out the big money now and then own everything, have everything in house. It is ours. We are not relying on other people for X, Y, or Z. And, you know, I don't know whether that ends up being the right formula. Again, time will tell. We are still in our infancy of all of this, but it seems as if everybody kind of really got to that conclusion pretty quickly that we would rather just own everything and be able to do whatever we want to with our own stuff.
Matt, if I could find the funny money that is flying around right now in this industry, I'd be looking to buy instead of partner too. Because why should I be looking for synergies when the synergy can be all mine?
Yeah.
The money that is available through SPACs and through other forms of, you know, debt leveraging and capital raise right now It's unbelievable. And if you're one of the big players that the market believes in, if you are a DraftKings or a Flutter or an MGM right now, and you have the ability to come across this money and essentially say, yeah, we're good for it. Don't worry, we'll get to it later. Of course, you're going to go out and try to acquire someone right now. The multiples that are being spent on some of these companies are pretty impressive. I mean, you know, you're definitely dreaming on the potential of the market 5 to 10 to 15 years out. But that's where we are. And that's the state of things here right now. So, you know, we don't know if that bid will actually be accepted by Gamesys. I mean, right now they could very easily come back and, you know, drive the number up just because they want to. Because that's where we are today.
It is absolutely crazy. But we will, you know, as you mentioned, they're not anywhere yet. So we will certainly keep you updated when Bally's does get going and see if all of these moves pay off for them. But as I mentioned, that the rebrand of those networks is at the end of the month. So something's got to happen, Adam. Like they're going to have Bally Sports Networks here in a week. So I would imagine something has to get going.
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, they do have to, you know, proof of concept is a real thing, but just not quite yet for them.
So things will get going for sure. Down in my neck of the woods forever, it was the Mercedes Superdome. Of course, that was also one of the, you know, one of the big ways that the owners down there, the Benson family, made money. They own a bunch of car dealerships and things like that. But it looks as if we will not be calling it the Mercedes Superdome after all.
No, this is certainly a story right in your wheelhouse, so I will get you the nuts and bolts and then bounce it right back to you. But it appears from a report in The Athletic that Caesars is going to buy the naming rights to the Superdome. Appears that it will be $10 million a year over the course of 20 years, $200 million or double what the deal was between Mercedes-Benz and the Superdome. So it should be very interesting to see whether this is something that becomes a trend, and whether this becomes a trend specifically with the NFL, because it's not like the NFL has come right out and said, we love gambling, but they sure haven't stood in the way of anything that looks like it over the last, you know, almost 3 years ago, since that time especially. But I'm interested from your perspective, because is Caesars a bigger name in the Louisiana area than I'm familiar with?
Well, so the interesting thing is I think this is kind of a dual project, because right down there in the, you know, right outside of the French Quarter, right down there, right, you know, down the road from the Superdome is, well, what will formerly be known as Harrah's New Orleans. They are going to rebrand Harrah's as Caesars New Orleans because, of course, Caesars being the bigger brand than Harrah's. And so I think this is kind of a overall bigger push to actually get the name brand of Caesars much bigger within the state. And of course, as you and I both well know, whenever sports betting finally does roll out here in what we assume to be by football season, but maybe not, maybe not. I don't know. There's weird things coming out from down there as well. You know, that people will be kind of synonymous with all that. But I guess the funny thing is, from you and I's perspective, is the fact that it seems to be that the sports betting brand that Caesars is going to go with is William Hill. So, you know, it's like you're spending all this money to brand Caesars, but it seems as if the sports betting arm is still going to just be William Hill that they continue to push. So yeah, I don't really know for sure what kind of the focus of that marketing is, because at least from a sports betting standpoint, it seems to be a little bit scattered. I mean, from you and I's perspective, we know William Hill very well. And I think, you know, people within the bubble know William Hill very well. I don't know if it wouldn't better suit Caesars to just, I'm not going to say kill the William Hill brand, but I mean, Caesars to me seems to holds more gravitas. It certainly has more history here in the United States and things like that. So I don't know. I would probably just push Caesars as opposed to William Hill.
Well, here's the most recent quote from the Caesars quarterly call when they wrapped up 2020. It's from a story from our Pat Evans, our newest reporter at LSR. Said William Hill is in a holding pattern since the deal announcement, according to Caesars CEO Tom Reeg. Here's the quote from Tom Reeg. They had a brand they knew would go away as a main driver of the business, so it made little sense to spend a lot of money to build the brand that's going to change in early 2021. We've not been in charge of that. We're in this to be a winner. If the answer is we need to invest more money to build market share, you should expect we would consider that. So You know, Caesars, I think, is going to be flexible in terms of the way they go about this. But I also think when you look back on the original deal that Caesars made with the NFL, what was it, almost 2 years ago at this point, that was a deal where they tried to split hairs, right? They tried to say, well, this is about the Caesars casino. This isn't about sports betting. Right. As though there's not a pretty obvious bleed for people in terms of what they look at, you know, when it comes to the brand. So you can try to work the semantics any way you want. But what you said makes a lot of sense, that this becomes much more of a we'll say an omni-channel play for Caesars in those naming rights.
Yeah, I certainly believe that when it's all said and done. Now, we made a big stink here on the podcast about when Barstool was finally going to launch. They launched in Pennsylvania. We've now seen them head to other states. And it seems now, Adam, maybe they were using Pennsylvania. And listen, from a business perspective, maybe this was a smart idea, just kind of using Pennsylvania as a little bit of a test market, make sure they worked out any kinks, make sure that they had everything running the way that they want it to run before they really started vast expansion and rapid expansion. But the rate here seems to be much more quick than it was when they first launched. So maybe Barstool and Penn have decided that they feel pretty good with the product, that maybe they feel pretty good with how things are rolling out with, you know, even the online side of things. And they're going to be getting into just about every state that they're allowed to.
So Jay Snowden, the CEO of Penn National, was on CNBC in a Barstool hoodie talking about this and said that they essentially are going to be coming every 3 to 5 weeks with a new state before NFL betting starts. So, I mean, essentially every month, right? A new market every month before we get back to NFL betting. So the next ones up are going to be Indiana by the end of April and New Jersey in May. And I think the really interesting one there is New Jersey, because the market share is so well established in New Jersey, right? That's one of the first where we're going to see, can Barstool come in and upset what has been the most orderly of orders that we've seen in the U.S. sports betting industry since the fall of PASPA. Now, we know that they're in Michigan already. They are in Illinois as well. So you mentioned the success in Pennsylvania. I think one thing that's worth looking at is how they performed in Michigan, which was their next state, right? First 10 days of January, they had 24% of handle, which is a pretty remarkable number for a brand that has been clear about the fact that it's not doing a lot of marketing spend. That share dropped over the course of February to 13%. And it also included Barstool going out there and spending a significant amount of money on promos. So they might not be spending to bring people in, but the ones that they have, they are spending money to activate. So Barstool is not without its costs. It might be a much lower cost per acquisition than a lot of companies are going through. But here's the list of states that they might find themselves in before we get down to the next NFL season: Colorado, Iowa, Tennessee, Virginia, and West Virginia. So those are the ones where the market access is clear for them, where they might continue to launch. And it's really remarkable, Matt, that we talk about four brands that have made an impact in the U.S. DraftKings and FanDuel, who have spent years upon years building up the DFS brand to transition into sports betting, to, you know, also have online casino. BetMGM, which of course is one of the biggest names in all of gaming, period. And here comes Barstool as a media site that has had no arm when it comes to gambling. And you have to give them some amount of credit for being able to make this sort of an impact this quickly. Is it sustainable? That's the big question everyone has right now. But, you know, for Penn investors, they certainly don't mind what the returns have been thus far.
No, absolutely. And I think what we're learning from this Barstool thing, and listen, this is something that they knew better, I think, than we did when they were coming into all of this. But there's a difference between having a platform and having a following, right? And like, you've got these, you have these massive deals that have been made. Of course, you know, we talked about one of the biggest case studies here being The Score, where, you know, their second biggest sports app, according to them, in the App Store here, even in the United States, have yet to make any sort of impact whatsoever at all on the sports betting landscape. And, you know, there's just a difference between having a platform and even a big platform and actually having a following. And what Barstool does very, very well is they have a following. Like, those guys, like, when they say, hey, do this, or we're going to do this, or we like this, or whatever, the people that are fans of that site do it, you know? And like, so there's a big, big difference, I think. And, you know, maybe that is something that we will start to see more down down the line, you know, does a DraftKings, does a FanDuel, a points bet, a whoever, hell, Bally's with all this money that they've got, whatever, you know, do they try to acquire or get into, invest in some sort of site similar to a Barstool, as opposed to just one of these, you know, a big media conglomerate, a big media entity? That's all fine and dandy. But, you know, again, this the Barstool following, the Barstool effect is real. And, you know, maybe there is at least somebody on a smaller scale that you can at least try to replicate that with.
It's possible that someone tries that, Matt. I just don't see how it happens, because for better or for worse, and we've made clear both the for better and for worse on this podcast, Barstool is a unique animal. Mm-hmm. They have spent years building up this loyalty. They have spent years building up a brand that, let's just say, has a very specific audience. And, you know, we might not agree with many of the things they do to build that audience and to sustain that audience, but it is a loyal audience, as you mentioned, that's going to do what they ask them to do. So I don't know who else out there has the kind of media following that you would say generates that loyalty. It's none of the major media companies that we've already seen partner up. It's not ESPN or CBS or Turner. Yeah. None of those have that kind of following. And so you would probably have to look somewhere outside of the sports realm and say, is there another base of users that is so engaged in its product that it could be migrated over to sports betting? And I think the only one, and you're welcome to smack me down as crazy on this, but I've heard people mention it. It's not like people look at Amazon the same way they look at Barstool. Of course, they're very right. different animals. But those who are loyal to Prime and the Amazon ecosystem, and those who are loyal to the Google ecosystem, just to name another, are very loyal to those ecosystems. And we've seen Amazon Prime and Google both get into streaming rights.
Well, and the thing with Amazon and Prime, and this is why I've had people laugh at me when I've mentioned that as well. And the thing about that is one of the things we really haven't seen at scale anyway yet. Yes, there are the little bonus bets and there are the different little things like that that the sports books are rolling out and all that. But you and I both know that you're still operating these sports books on the slimmest of margins, right? So you can't, like, loyalty programs and how many promos you can run outside of just getting someone to sign up, like what you actually do to people who are, you know, already your customers and stuff. Like it's a tough putt, right? Because there is a line that you have to walk between, you know, keeping people happy and profitability. And the thing that Amazon can definitely do is they can spiff you all kinds of different ways, right? So if you're talking about, you know, having a Prime account, and if you are a Prime member, you get X, Y, and Z on your sportsbook side of things, or if you bet X amount of money in the sportsbook side of things, then you get X, Y, Z over here and over there and whatever, free, you know, three free movie rentals a month, or, you know, there's endless possibilities or something of how that they can actually spiff a customer. And so that's why I think that people laughing that off is crazy, because when you talk about customer loyalty and how you can get the average Joe, you know, you and I might like a bonus bet and you and I might like a deposit bonus, but like if you can advertise, hey, you get, you know, free Prime or something, or you get free, you know, three free streaming movies a month or whatever, like that's how you speak to the everyman.
Oh, without question, Matt. And the everyman part is the part that our dear friends on sports betting Twitter either choose not to look at or just don't see, which is the everyman is where the large scale future of this is going. And, you know, the part about Amazon that I don't think people are paying enough attention to is, okay, so you and I know we're going to talk on this podcast about what the NFL wants for its data rights, right? Mm-hmm. And we're talking about that because of what what companies just spent on the rights to NFL games, right? What CBS and ESPN and Fox and Amazon just spent on the rights to the NFL. So Amazon goes big to get exclusive rights to Thursday Night Football. Why? What's the point for them, right? Does Amazon need Thursday Night Football on its Prime streaming service to get people into Prime? No, they have a million other ways to get people into Prime. It's a great perk. It's a great way to make people look at you. But something like being able to bet on that game, exclusive offers on that game to an audience that might not otherwise be interested in watching that game, just seems like it is way too easy of a crossover to be ignored.
Yeah, it is just it's pretty interesting. And, you know, again, we keep saying this. I know it seems like, oh, all these people are so incredibly established, but we really are. We are in the infancy of all this, and all this is going to look massively different in 5 years. So just keep that in mind. No doubt about it. You just alluded to it. I bumped this down a little bit because this was just a pretty interesting deal, because we didn't talk about just the TV right deal in general last week on here. But one of the stories that came out as part of all of this data dump that came out of the NFL talks and what was going on was maybe a figure that they were looking for their data.
So according to an article in CNBC, and we confirmed this independently, the NFL is looking for $100 million a year for the exclusive rights to distribute its sports betting data. There are three firms bidding on it, according to our sources, the ones you would expect, Sport Radar and Genius Sports, and then also IMG, who we know has been trying to make its way into this part of the world as well through golf and tennis and UFC primarily. But okay, so $100 million probably in the ecosystem of things that we're talking about doesn't sound like much, right? The TV rights just sold for more than $100 billion. The NFL can pretty much ask whatever it wants here. Sport Radar is in the process of going public, and we know that having the NFL is certainly a big part of what Sport Radar wants to pitch in terms of its potential future. So in a market where live betting could eventually end up being 75% of the market, and in a market where everything is about the NFL in the U.S. sports betting world, $100 million feels huge, might not end up being all that huge, and might have a big, big impact in the long run on how the industry operates, because ultimately, if a big data company has to pay that much for the rights to NFL data, that's not where the buck's going to stop. That's going to get passed down to the books, and that's going to get passed down ultimately to the consumer.
Yeah, that is one of the things we will have to be kind of monitoring with all of that, right? Is how does that work out for you, me, and everybody else out there? Because like you said, nobody's just happily accepting that cost just for the fun of it.
No, sir. No, we know that very well here in Nevada.
All right, Adam, take us home with our quick little hitters here on the states.
Well, how about I go you one bigger and start with a country? Canada has moved its sports betting bill once again. Continues slow but steady progress. It does look like that a bill that is supported by the government and has been heavily pushed by, of course, the Score, who is Canada based, is going to make its way through for passage this year. It does look like that Canada's ban on single game betting likely will fall at some point this year. We're looking at more movement on that next week, so we'll keep an eye on what's going on there. Connecticut. Hey, Connecticut, it looks like you might finally get something done. Years and years and years, we have talked about Connecticut and said, yeah, no matter what happens, it's going to end up in court. Well, it might still end up in court, but at the very least, you have agreement with Governor Ned Lamont and both the Mashantucket-Pequot and the Mohegan tribes. And that is the biggest thing that they had to figure out. The tribes believe they have exclusivity to offer sports betting, and they've come to a deal with the governor in which they would not be the only ones offering sports betting, but they would get some other considerations from the state of Connecticut. And ultimately, you'd have both the tribes and the lottery able to offer sports betting online in Connecticut. It's in the legislature right now. It just got through a joint committee yesterday and is going to the floor of both houses. But I have to say, as much as I have been bearish on Connecticut in the past, you have to move Connecticut probably into the top two or three of states that are most likely to legalize this year. In New York, nothing to update. So no, we didn't forget you, New York. Here is your little New York segment for every podcast. We have a budget deadline coming up next week. That's when we will find out something on what's going on with New York. We know that Governor Cuomo and both the House and Senate are negotiating on what form of sports betting will end up in their budgets, whether it'll be a lottery run model or whether it will be something that has to go through or something that can go through multiple operators. Another state that we didn't expect to be talking about, but seems to be speeding along, is Wyoming. Up there in Wyoming, the bill has already cleared one chamber and is on the floor of the other as we head toward potential passage. It's on the Senate floor right now. And The folks that our Pat Evans talked to up there say that they believe the votes are there to get it through the Senate. So that just means that it would be a matter of getting it signed by the governor. It would be an open competitive model in Wyoming. Obviously not a huge market, but you know, when you're checking off states, you certainly did not expect to have Wyoming at the top of the list. It got done. South Dakota was signed into law by Governor Kristi Noem last week. So we will wait for the launch in Deadwood. That could be beyond Deadwood, debating some questions as to the constitutionality of mobile beyond Deadwood up there right now. Still waiting to see how that ultimately shakes down. Weird movements in Georgia today. Bills that had gotten out of the Rules Committee kicked back to the Rules Committee. The session's winding down there. They don't have much time to get something done in Georgia. End of March is when it needs to be passed by. And so Georgia has at alternating times looked great and not so great. And right now we're probably living somewhere in the middle right now with the state of Georgia. That's the top of my list. I want to make sure I didn't forget anything else, Matt, because I go through so many of these articles every week. Legal Sports Report put out last week 25 articles. We're on pace to do around that this week. And that, of course, creates a lot of shall we say traffic for me to deal with. Here's another one. In Kansas, there was a hearing last week on the House side. Nothing really big came out of that hearing, other than it was very interesting to see one of the representatives in Kansas show up in a positive vibes only Barstool hoodie. First time I think that we've seen any particular representative pitching for an individual sports book during a particular hearing, but that happened last week as well. And I'll finish up with one that I know is going to stun you. The latest numbers are in from DC sports betting in February. Shocker, William Hill and its retail book slash app that is only available within two blocks of that retail book, still kicking Gambet DC up and down the street.
That is, oh man, that is just absolutely amazing. That is just absolutely, that's one of my favorite stories. It's one of my favorite stories each and every month. I got to be honest.
Really, if you want to enjoy the DC story, Matt Waters, who you heard from earlier here on this podcast, no one covers that story quite like Matt Waters covers that story. Definitely follow his Twitter @ByMatthewWaters for coverage of DC.
I love it. I love it so incredibly much. I'll be interested to see the numbers for March whenever those finally come out, Adam, with our first March Madness in two seasons. So us, of course, not getting March Madness last year. And when you consider where we were last year to where we were this year, several more markets open as well. So I will be very interested to see if we get the massive, massive surge, or if this weird year with everything that's going on, that it's, you know, it's nice and the numbers I expect will certainly be nice, but maybe not eye popping. And then we're really going to be looking forward to more of the March Madness in 2022.
Well, something that I think is worth looking at, and we didn't talk Nevada numbers, even though they came out today, I've neglected to put that on our agenda, but Nevada comes in roughly $550 million of handle in February, up year over year over last February. But in February, nearly $200 million wagered on basketball, and that's prior to March Madness. So if that's any indication of what we could be looking at, there could be a pretty significant bump up. I know you and I both spend regular time in one particular casino in Las Vegas, and I will tell you that when I was in there for one of the first days of March Madness, you would not have known there was a pandemic. It was wall to wall in that sports book. So certainly a good sign of interest.
Yeah, I'm can't wait for those numbers to come out. I think it's going to be really fun to kind of compare those, really more 2021 to 2022, as some of these other states, one, mature a little bit more, and two, we get, you know, knock on wood, a little bit more normalcy going throughout the country. As you mentioned, really do appreciate Matt Waters stopping by, giving us some insight on the Tennessee side of things. Again, we have state dedicated pages across our whole network. So if you live in one of these states and want to get all of the stuff, all of the news and all of the gaming stuff going on within your state, just you can pretty much at this point, Adam, I think you can pretty much Google any state and our sister sites will come up for if you want all of the news. So you can certainly take in all that stuff over there as well. If you want to hit us up every single time that we make a stupid tweet, which I say that you should definitely do. Me more than Adam. Adam doesn't make stupid tweets, but at Matt Brown M2, at Adam Candy, that is two E's, no Y. Adam, what would you say your efficiency is on the Twitter? Like, how many tweets do you, after you hit send, do you regret per month?
Ooh, see, I have a very, very dedicated system of no tweet gets sent for at least 5 minutes after it's written.
Okay.
Because efficiency rate there, I mean, I would be like Karis LeVert just throwing things at the side of the house if if that's the way I went on it. So I would say it's gotten a lot better over the years.
Yeah. No, mine's fairly low. Mine's fairly low as well. Same deal. Mainly because I just learned what is really, really annoying on Twitter. And so I just try to not do those annoying things.
Yes, that is a great way to look at it.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, I used to do that. How annoying must I have been? So I've tried to avoid doing all that stuff for sure. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, where you can find us. Go in, subscribe, rate, and review. We really, really do appreciate that. And of course, as always, all of the words for everything that we are talking about here on the podcast can be found over at LegalSportsReport.com. For Adam, I'm Matt. Talk to you guys next week.